I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Hi, everybody. Kevin and Sam here, and thanks for joining our show tonight. We're speaking with Jim Bellamacy, President and CEO of Special Olympics Alaska, and we're going to talk about community programs, leadership, overcoming challenges, and the Special Olympics Alaska program and the evolution of that program over the past 10, 15 years.
So I'd like to introduce everyone to Jim Bellamacy. And after I introduce Jim, Jim actually has a story about how Jim met Kevin back in 1996. I want Jim to tell that story. But let me introduce Jim to our audience. So Jim Bellamacy was born and raised in Bridgeport, Connecticut. He was a graduate of Iona College in 1976. He moved to Kodiak, Alaska in 1977 and became involved with Special Olympics Alaska as a volunteer in 1979. Jim professionally has commercial fish. He's been a contractor and a teacher. And in 1996, Jim became the president and CEO for Special Olympics Alaska. He's been recognized and has won many awards for his advocacy for people with disabilities. And he presently serves on the UAA School of Nursing Board, the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, and the State and National Recreation and Parks Board, and he's a commissioner for the Heritage Land Bank for the Municipality of Anchorage. So welcome to the show, Jim. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Sam and Kevin. Before I start, too, for all the people listening, there are not two better people in this community than Kevin and Sam, and this wasn't rehearsed, but back in December 1995, I was a good Alaskan headed east for Christmas to see my family, and we got stuck in Anchorage, and not stuck, but coming out of Kodiak, we had a six-hour layover. So at that time, I was a Hilton Honors, so we used to go to the top of the world at Hilton and get a prime rib and king crab, and you get two for one at that time back in 95. Short story is the server comes out and starts trying to sell us the king crab. Well, we commercial fish for years and on the Bering Sea for and Gulf of Alaska for king crab, and this gentleman kept on telling me this is pretty fresh king salmon. Thought we were tourists.
King crab.
I'm thinking king salmon because I'm wondering where they are today. But anyway, king crab. And so we said, okay, well, we're going to order the king crab and prime rib. And lo and behold, he came back out, asked, what you think of the king crab? And we started telling him, sharing with him our biological understanding of it needs to be frozen. It's not been frozen at 40 below. We went on for like 15 minutes why this wasn't fresh and king crab and why it wasn't taken care of properly. So he said, what can we do? What can I do? And I said, well, you can get involved with Special Olympics Alaska. And he said, Ma, my wife and I just moved here. We're Cornell graduates. We want to give back to the community. And both Sam and Kevin are a legend in the Special Olympics Alaska movement and have been a tremendous asset. And both have become tremendous mentors towards me as we grew in our friendship over the 15 years. So that king crab has come a long way in 15 years. And more important, the friendship that we have formed and the what you have given back to me in our friendship has just been tremendous. And, of course, also the Special Olympics Alaska. Because of the expertise of Kevin and Sam, they do so much. Kevin helped write so many grants, and Sam was so supportive through those years. I mean, from buildings to innovative programs to winning an award from Steve Jobs for bringing computers into Wendler Middle School. The list goes on, my friends, and you have some tremendous people in this community, Sam and Kevin.
Wow, so I would be speechless if this wasn't radio, so we're going to keep talking. But thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And that's the gift of Special Olympics, because it really gave us an opportunity to experiment and feel into our own potential and ability to impact a community. And maybe we should actually just kind of walk through the program. When you first started with Special Olympics Alaska, I think it was 1996, what was the state of the program that you arrived, and maybe walk through some of the changes that you've put in place?
Can I go back just a little further than that? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Because just yesterday, a person by the name of Chuck Millick, who was one of the founders of Special Olympics Alaska back in 1970, He passed away about 15, 20 years ago, and his wife just passed away last year at 96 years old. His neighbors brought me over a package of materials from the old days of Special Olympics Alaska, a picture of him and Eunice Kennedy Shriver, and all the things that had taken place in the 70s with Special Olympics Alaska. And it's just amazing to see the evolution. So when I got involved in 1979, I'd like to tell everyone I was 10 years old, but it's a little older than that.
Wow.
And in 1980, we hosted the state summer games in Kodiak. At that time, it was a celebration. And there's people like Lucy Hope and Larry Ouellette in this community, and they know because we were there, and it was a celebration. We took people out of the institutes. We put them on planes, and we got them onto the track and field, and they ran around the track, and we'd be in the middle of the track. There'd be clowns and huggers, and it was such a joy of celebration that we were able to bring people out of the institutes. And having said that, I did my deal as a volunteer in 1980, putting on the games, and there was these elders in Kodiak who pushed me out the door. And they said, you need to do more. And I said, well, I kind of did my thing. And they said, no, you got to do more. And then I started wondering, why do our guys don't have uniforms? And why don't we have the recognition they have? And why do they? So my journey began in 1979, 1980. In the mid-80s, Chuck Millick pushed me out the door big time, said, you need to do more on a state level, on a national level. And so by 1996, I decided to take move to Anchorage from Kodiak, which was a big deal for me. In 1996, and so we wanted to build a program because we totally believe that people with intellectual disabilities are the most underserved, and I think they're underserved because people just don't know who they are and what they are because they've been sheltered and put away for so many years.
Can you tell us a little bit, even backing up further, so the genesis of Special Olympics International, you know, where that started, what the beginning of the program was and where it began?
Started with my hero and many people's hero. Back in the 50s, Eunice Kennedy Shriver had a sister who had an intellectual disability. And having said that, she spent her whole life, I mean, as a Kennedy, trying to care for people with intellectual disabilities. She began in the 50s. In the 60s, when her brother became president of the United States, and for some of the younger people listening, you used to have to do the president fitness test. She asked John, President Kennedy, what are we doing for people with intellectual disabilities? And so in 1961, 62, she began a camp in her backyard. And I have to tell you, in Alaska, we have our Camp Shriver Alaska going on right now. There's a couple people from Mat-Su participating, and actually a teacher from Mat-Su who is the camp director. There's only six in the country right now, and Alaska is one of them. So getting back to your point, Eunice Kennedy Shriver started Special Olympics way back in the 50s. Talk about leadership. Talk about persevering. Talking about not taking no for an answer. Talking about taking the most vulnerable, the most underserve people in our world, and now to over 4 million athletes in 180 countries, one person.
That's amazing. I mean, you are actually the one that we learned from. We've been with Jim when Jim's been out fundraising, and he'll talk to somebody, and the person will tell him, no, absolutely not. And Jim will walk away, and he's happy, and we'll say, Jim, you just got to know. And he's like, no, you don't understand. No is the start of a relationship.
He said no means yes. And I thought that was great because, you know, for most people, no is like, you know, it's a crushing defeat. And Jim was only motivated that because a relationship had begun. And, I really learned a lot from that time.
Well, a lot of times people who are saying no are actually listening. And because of where they are financially or because where they are if they want to volunteer, a no is a really good answer because maybe with time, we can influence them to say, you know what, if you had more time, if you had more, what is it? Why is no? What's the reason why for the no? And let's see if we can help make that. Most of the time it's because people really don't know. Two is they don't have the time or the resources at that time. And so just create that partnership and relationship. And through the years, of course you don't want to be a pest, but you want to be persistent.
Right, I think about all the things that I've seen you guys in partnership with the community, like the Torch Run and the Polar Plunge, just where those events started and what they look like, you know, the first year or the second year and where they are now. It's just amazing. I mean, every year things get better and more people participate and more people get excited about Special Olympics.
Yeah, when we talk about the leadership, when we talk about leadership and we talk about Alaska and we talk about Special Olympics, you know, there's a person, Ted Stevens, who's done so much for Title IX and for the Olympics and helped bring the World Games here in 2001. But what the point that I want to make is that so many roots of Special Olympics worldwide started in Alaska with the Healthy Athletes program going to the next level, to our school program going to the next level. Many programs that are now being used worldwide started with the leadership in Alaska, including the Old Sum Run, the Special Olympics Mile event, which actually started in Alaska and now is the Torch Run. So in the global movement of over 4 million athletes, with over only 600,000 people in this state, we have a major presence in a global movement. So don't tell me we as Alaskans can't move ANWR and can't move oil and can't move fish and can't get to that next level. I'm not promoting either way. What I'm trying to say is whatever that is, Alaskans right now at this moment have so much that they can give to the rest of the country and world right now, just like we did in Special Olympics, our little minor part. And for Special Olympics, it was just it's just the sports part of it. But people like Hope Cottages and Steve Lesko and many, Mary Jane Michael, do you know that Alaska was the first to get rid of the institute in this country? Broke down the barriers of the institutions in this country. The first state was Alaska.
What do you mean by broke down the barriers?
Well, you know, before we were statehood, or before, if you were born with intellectual disability, you were put in an institution. And in 1959, we became a state. There are five things that you had to do to become a state: university, militia, law enforcement, and a mental institution. And so if you were born before 1958 with a disability, you were shipped to Seattle. You were not able to stay with your family. Once 59 came, we became a state. Then we built Harborview, which was in Valdez. So if you were born with a disability, you had to leave your family and go live in an institution.
Wow, I didn't know that part of our history.
Yeah. But having said that, Alaska was the first step break that down in the country. Now you see cluster homes. Now you see, you know, do you know that people now with intellectual disabilities are living longer because of the quality of life of being out of an institution, because they look different, because they acted different? Now they're part of our society, and look how much we've learned from them. And that we, only through sports, help people with intellectual disabilities gain confidence and gain friendships and gain the skills so that they can become productive members of society.
Thinking about Kevin's experience on a unified team back before we went to acupuncture school. Do you want to say anything about that?
Right. And there's school programs in place. Maybe, Jim, you can say a little bit more about them and how people get involved. But for me, Unified Sports has athletes pairing up with people without disabilities. So you have a different kind of dynamic, on, let's say, in basketball. So I'm playing with athletes, and really we're instructed not to make special accommodations, that everybody's really playing at a pretty high level of performance. And when I first started, I really didn't know what to expect. And by the end of the first game, I was completely wiped out. It was a very strong game. And that's the thing, is when the demand gets higher, then we all reach. And that's true across the board for human beings, is that if we're given the chance to excel, we're given the chance to reach, and all the support in the world to make that happen, new possibilities come up.
And I just want to go back to the question you asked, what was it like with Special Olympics Alaska in 1996? It was strong, and it was good, and we had like 400 or 500 athletes. But I couldn't sleep at night because there are over 10,000 people in the state of Alaska with developmental disability. Having said that, not all would participate in Special Olympics. So our quest was to get corporate Alaska, get the education people, get the professionals behind it, get the sports people behind it, to include people with intellectual disabilities in our community. We're proud today we're in over 2,000 athletes. So for every athlete we serve, there's five more we're after. Secondly, the partnerships we've built with our schools, we're over in 58 schools now with 1,500 athletes, partners and athletes. And our partnerships with the sports organization is the future. And right now we're starting at the age of two, which is called the Young Athlete Program, which the first Young Athlete Program, I believe, began here in Mat-Su, in the valley here. Mat-Su has a very strong program. But you asked me to talk about leadership, and you asked me to talk about leadership, and I put a lot of thought into this on the way out here and the last couple of days. And, you know, leaderships are words, and it comes out to words. It's leading by example. It's doing all that you can to be the best that you can. And through sports, those things happen. But at the end of the day, it's so challenging to make change. And everyone loves to change their smartphone. Everyone loves changing their computer. But who is changing inside, right? And it's changing so quickly, we can't get caught. We can't catch up to it. And so what are we doing for people with intellectual disabilities in our communities? And when I wake up in the morning, every day I ask myself, what activities director in high school is going to school thinking about people with intellectual disability to be integrated into the sports program or activities program? And it's a cultural shift. But it's so simple to do if you communicate it out, because it's just a need. But boy, we sure like those iPads, and we like our smartphones. I have them all, and I'm a Galaxy 3 person myself. But having said all that, those are easy. Why are those so easy to make, which are really quick, but we can't personally make that choice inside to say, you know what, I'm going to make a difference?
You know, I think that that's a really great question. And I want to just insert for a moment that the program started with 300 athletes, 200 athletes. Is that correct?
Close to four. Our first program started in 1969 in Fairbanks. In 96, when I became the president of CL, we had about 400 athletes and about a $400,000 budget.
And now you're serving 2,000 athletes.
Over 2,000 athletes with about a $1.4 million budget. But, you know, things have changed in 15 years, too.
I mean, when we first met, Jim, you were operating out of a condemned building on the Army base at Elmendorf. Yes. So, I mean, and now you're in your own building, and you're building, another addition to that. And you're looking at – you're also moving your focus to not just getting more athletes participating in the program, but you're looking at getting athletes healthy. So when you're talking about change, I mean, that's a big thing I've heard you talking a lot about, and that's something that, you know, we certainly address every day in our acupuncture practice. How do you get people to make the changes to get themselves healthy? And the athletes are no different. You know, you're trying to get them to work out regularly and look at their diet and look at lifestyle. I mean, that's important for them just as anybody else. Right?
Now that the institutions have been broken for people with intellectual disabilities, guess they're living longer. So now they're having the same issues, diabetes, they're having the same issues as everyone else. And so that's all new to the history in this entire world, because now we accept them as normal, quote unquote. Now doctors, the medical field, the universities also need to understand that they need to include everyone when they're going to school, so that they can take care of everyone, not just a certain group.
So you're saying that back, 30, 40 years ago, people with intellectual disabilities didn't actually have the same lifespan or longevity. And so because they were dying earlier, you wouldn't necessarily see some of the chronic illnesses.
Alzheimer's, dementia.
Yeah, so all that's happening now because people are living longer. So you need to start dealing with it.
Mm-hmm. White hair, balding hair, round stomachs, all those things that some people have when they get older, wiser.
Right. And the question about how is it that we inspire change? And of course, the best answer is to change ourselves, to actually really, because it's easy to be stimulated and excited and entertained by changing technologies and toys. But when it comes to changing ourselves, I think that in our hearts, I think that people really do want to reach for newness and to see what their potential is. But it always helps to see somebody that's actually ahead of them. It's like, you see a hero, a mentor that's actually leading the way. And then, you see that being expressed in somebody else's life. And you see, if that person can do that, I can do that too. And so maybe one of the answers, at least, is that we have more leaders that are actually taking that hard step of of taking themselves on. And that can be, it's very true in the healthcare profession. You know, healthcare providers are not always the best example of vital health, you know, as it turns out. So, you know, and that's probably true in all the great, in all the industries. So I think that, and if you look at the overall state of health in America, you do see increasing chronic illness, and a lot of that has to do with self-neglect, you know, and poor ideas about what self-care actually is. So I think that there's a cultural idea here that has to be addressed, which is how do we, it's just thinking about it isn't enough. We have to take ourselves on.
Well, I was at a National Recreation Parks board meeting in Washington, D.C., and the National Disease for Control spoke, and I know we all know this, 150 million Americans are overweight or have somewhat of a disease or diabetes out of 306 million Americans. It is now a security issue because our young kids aren't passing a physical to join our military. Okay. Out of those 150 million Americans, if 3% have an intellectual disability or disability, who is even talking about them?
Right. That's pretty staggering numbers when you think about it. You know, just and especially when considering that all of the research that's been done for years and years and years shows that 20 minutes, 30 minutes of exercise every day could change that drastically. Mm-hmm. So think about it. I mean, if everybody was just going out for a walk for 30 minutes a day, we could change that.
And they were saying for the young generation coming up today, and I don't want to talk negative, but these are facts. I think when a kid comes home from school, the average time inside is 7 hours now, as soon as they come home from school. Okay, they're not getting that walk. They're not doing the things that were done in the past because things are changing, you know, with electronics. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. All I'm trying to, my point getting across is if we're not healthy, we're not going to have the time to enjoy the things we need time to enjoy. So as smartphones and iPads and playing those games. So we have to make a shift. And I truly believe in this country, Alaska is a leader in this country right now with economic development, with the resources we have, with our schools, with our communities. We are leaders, but we're denying it. And I keep on wondering if Stevens or, and again, I'm not getting into politics, but Stevens or Begich or Egan's, if all those guys who, Wald Hickel, who were here, took that opportunity and made a difference, whether we like it or not, whatever those, made that difference. So we talk about leadership. There's an Alaskan out here that really needs to step to the plate. And I don't know who that Alaskan is, but someone. We have this opportunity right now to really make a difference in our country.
I agree with that completely. And I think there's something about living in Alaska that there's a culture here of possibility, of independence, an ability to actually go beyond limitations, and also an ability, because it's a relatively small community, even though it's a large state, and there's an ability through networks of people to make change happen if we will it, if we want it. And it is. It's like this generation needs to really reach deep and to rise to the plate the way the first generation of Alaskans really did, the ones you're speaking of.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the universities, we have great universities. We have great parks and rec. We've got all these great things that all of us have built who are here because we're all part of that. And, you know, my challenge is, my quest is always tell people the intellectual disabilities become more successful on and off the playing field, getting more volunteers involved because that unites us more than ever before. And but at the same time, you know, this goes back to one person who made this big change, Eunice Kennedy Shriver. And in Alaska, our communities are doing some great things. But I think we need to be woken up a little bit ourselves. And I think we need to, you know, get healthier. We need to not making excuses or rationalizing why I'm not the leader. Why am I not taking that next step? Why, you know, and I'm talking about all of us, why aren't we? And, you know, the people in Juneau are doing what they have to do, but we can make excuses of that what they're doing isn't what I want. But at the end of the day, are we doing our 30-minute walk? Are we eating healthy? Are we making that change within ourselves? because that's the hard part. But it's so easy to go to Best Buy and buy a new smartphone. Life's so much easier, I'm telling you. But where is that going to lead us?
You know, as you're saying that, I just remember the early time I had working in your office as a volunteer, and there were so many needs there. You need to have a website built right in the very beginning of the internet boom and all that. And, you know, who had website skills? Nobody. Kevin, build us a website. I'm like, what? And then it was fundraising. I'm like, hey, I've never really done much with fundraising. Okay, great. You're on this. You know, and, you know, you really had a vision. You knew what needed to be done. You weren't really held back by the limitation of people's skill sets, because those can be expanded. All you need to do is actually start with the inspiration and really push, I think, for me anyway, you push me outside of my comfort zone, and I discovered skills I never knew that I had. And so I think that's part of what you're saying. And it's that willingness, though. There's a certain amount of fear, I think, that certainly for me, I had to overcome, because I didn't want to do something really big that I didn't have training, that I couldn't do well. I mean, but you weren't concerned about that. You were like, look, a website is better than no website, and just get the ball rolling. And there's a truth. The truth is that once you start in a particular skill, it's not long, if you're putting your heart and soul in it, that no matter where you start, you end up with something quite effective and that generates results. And that's definitely been the case in the time we worked with you.
And Jim's always been a vision guy for me. One of the things I'm thinking that's really interesting is I'm looking back at you guys got the World Games here in Alaska in 2001. So we're actually 11 years past when the World Games were here, and you started as CEO in 1996. So we're like double the amount of time that you had to get to the World Games. Now you've got twice the amount of time, and where the program has grown, because you've always held this big vision. I mean, there's no way, from looking at, you know, the humble beginnings of where you started, things that we could have imagined that we would be here. But I know that you had that vision for the program. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 15 years?
And how do you overcome challenges in your own mind? How do you do that? Because you had obstacles, I know, throughout this whole process. Anybody would, with the kind of scope of vision that you've actually been reaching for.
Two tough questions. First of all, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll just start and then we'll take
No, 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 no. I mean, when I was looking back at some of my notes from the beginning on the first month on the job, I went to Juneau and spoke to Governor Knowles at the time about bringing the World Games here in 2001, which was a $25 million venture with 80 countries and over 2,000 athletes. Eunice Kennedy Shriver said it's too cold in Alaska. Other people said we don't have a big enough airport to get the whole entire world in here. But, you know, in the 80s, they were talking about bringing the Olympics here. No one was talking about intellectual disabilities. I mean, people in the field, Hope Cottages and all the other providers were, but they were leaving out people with intellectual disabilities because they didn't know. And I was like, wow, wow, what if we brought the World Games to Alaska? And I had a choice. And my choice was, I came from the community, is to spend more time in the communities or bring the big vision to Alaska and let all Alaskans see it, and then them make a decision of how they wanted to see Special Olympics Alaska for the future. So that's my vision for the future. So Alaskans are the ones who have to see this through in the next generation. But on the other hand, when it came to the World Games, there were a lot of people who stepped to the plate, and which truly made a difference. And when you can bring a vision and people can see it, and they can touch it and they can feel it, it makes a big difference in people's lives.
That's great, Jim. I remember Arnold Schwarzer. We were in Maryland at the time and seeing the show from remote. We're going to come right back and we'll speak more with Jim Bellmacy, President and CEO of Special Olympics Alaska.
Is that all right?
Support for Radio Free Palmer comes from the Palmer Downtown Deli. Palmer Downtown Deli provides free Wi-Fi in an informal, casual, conversational environment, or for just individual solace. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner dishes, wraps, specialty sandwiches, soups, or desserts, including gelato Italian ice cream, are offered along with coffee, espresso, tea, specialty waters, or drinks. Music Arts performing live can be enjoyed every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. A comprehensive summary of Palmer Downtown Deli's menu options can be found at palmerdeli.com, and phone orders at 745-4100 are available as well. The Palmer Downtown Deli is located on South Alaska Street. The Palmer Downtown Deli, supporting community connectivity and community radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Special Olympics CEO Jim Belmacy, and we were just talking about his vision for getting the World Games to Alaska back in 2001, the Special Olympics Alaska, well, Special Olympics World Games. One thing, when we were talking to Jim about this whole process, Jim told us that it was very common for local programs to actually, once a World Games came into a particular state, that the local program actually had a problem staying afloat after the fact, because people supported the World Games coming in, and then once the World Games left, the local program would often flounder and not make it. So in our case, Special Olympics Alaska program has gotten stronger since the World Games and flourished in amazing ways. And we're just going to talk a little bit about the new campus that's being created. But a little bit more about the World Games would be great, about how you managed to do that.
Well, I had a few dreams of Special Olympics in my life, and one was to bring the World Games to Alaska so that Alaskans, as I said earlier, could bring the vision to Alaska and people could see it. Two was to build a facility and a campus so the next generation of people with intellectual disabilities would have a place to go to, just like Colorado Springs. And the third dream, and then we'll get back to World Games, is right now, right, the Olympics are going to be in London here next month. We have Special Olympic athletes around the world who are just a couple steps away of qualifying score for the 100 meters.
Wow.
Okay?
That's awesome.
Because of one person, Eunice Kenny Shriver. And I truly believe that that person with intellectual disabilities who's going to qualify for the Olympics is going to come from the great state of Alaska.
Wow.
Okay, we're going to hold you to that.
Well, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because when people said we couldn't have World Games here, I would say to Eunice Kennedy Shriver, what a better place for someone from Kazakhstan, from Russia, from Poland, to come to Alaska, because Alaskans care for the people. Because we've all came here kind of on our own, not all of us. But we understand that sense of family. When people come here, that we take care of them. We take them to the airport. We take them home. And I over and over to Mrs. Shriver, we're going to be fine once they get here. They're going to be fine. And also, too, the amount of sports. Do you know, with 700,000 people, we have like five people in the National Hockey League, a couple of NBA players, baseball and football players out of a state of 700,000. That's the leadership from the sports partnerships, from the PE teachers, from everyone in all the communities. So bringing the World Games here in my world was not like a big deal, but convincing people to come to Alaska, because we like to think of ourselves as so provincial. We like to think of ourselves as not being global. But you know, all the salmon that has run through this state in the last 100 years is all global. We were the first with global marketing. We were the first in taking fish and bringing it with the Japanese and with Norwegians, and where many states didn't have that opportunity. We were way further ahead. And to answer your question, because we're a new state, just like we learned from Washington and from the East Coast how to manage our fish, and so knowing how to manage the World Games in Alaska, because we learned from our past, and we take from our past, and we use it for our future. We're not scared of that. We take what we can learn, and so we can make it a better place. And hopefully, and what we did do after the World Games, we set a high bar for the next World Games to be in Japan, the World Games, and we set that bar high. And guess what? People from around the world have risen that bar ever since.
Wow. So looking
you
at...
You haven't heard me talk this way, too. I can put the radio in front of me. We've been friends for a long time. I bring some new stuff to them today.
Yeah,
so.
This is great. This is great. So where is the next games going to be?
Next games are going to be in South Korea in January, last 2 weeks. First time that South Korea will hold games for people with intellectual disabilities of this magnitude. And then our national game, we have four Alaskans participating, one from the Matsu community. And then we go to national games in 2014 in Princeton, New Jersey. And then we're bringing the World Games back to the United States, to L.A. in 2015, which probably will be to the national games in 2014. And then 2015 World Games in the United States, we're really going to get to that next level of understanding of health and of sports and what sports is all about. Because it's not about winning championships.
Right.
It's about doing your personal best. And that's what you learn through sports. And oh, by the way, if you're in sports and you're in Special Olympics and you had an intellectual disability, 52% of our athletes are working. Compared to if you're not involved with Special Olympics and you have a developmental disability or intellectual disability, only 10% of those people are working.
So just by merely participating in the Special Olympics programs and doing the games and competing, they develop skills that allow them to be part of the workforce and be more self-sufficient.
But yet we like to think we're different.
Uh-huh.
But right. We're not. When it comes to sports. Andrew Lucking from Stanford, a major quarterback from Stanford, lost to go to the Rose Bowl. And they announced, they said, well, how do you feel? He said, well, I would never give up my 4 years, the friendships that I built, the confidence that I gained, and I became healthier. So it's the same with Special Olympic athletes, but we like to think we're different because someone looks a little different.
Right.
I don't get it.
You know, what this reminds me of is the story of Christopher Reeves, who, you know, was the actor that played Superman. I think most people know about him and his story, but he had a riding accident and he had a spinal cord injury that left him paralyzed from the neck down. And he needed a ventilator just to breathe. But one of the things, he was asked what was one of the most frustrating things about his situation, his circumstance. And he had a surprising answer, which was, he said, what really is the most difficult is dealing with people who act like they have disabilities who don't. And so here was a person who, he was told, I think within a period of a year, he would get whatever recovery he was going to get back, and anything beyond that, just that time period, there was no precedent for spinal cord injuries continuing to heal. So after a year and getting no gains, no return beyond what he had in his injury, people basically were trying to get him used to what he was going to have to live with. But he refused. He kept with his physical therapy program. He did everything, and he pushed, not for 1 year, not for 2 years, not for 3 years, with no return, no gain, nothing coming back and affirming his efforts whatsoever, and other people doubting him. And none. After 5 years, out of the blue, he was able to just move his pinky or his pointer That's finger. Right. And that changed everything. That changed everything because that means that something was possible that nobody believed was. And what it comes down to is that nobody tried that hard. So there's a whole dimension of possibility in human potential that's just sheerly not revealed itself because of not trying hard enough. And I think that connecting that with those of us who don't have disabilities, what does that say about what we're doing and how much further we have to go?
And what has you not try enough? It's just conclusions about what's already possible. You know, there's another video that we send out to our clients who are having a problem making changes. It's called Arthur's Inspirational Transformation, and it's a Gulf War vet who barely can walk. He's using braces to walk, and he's very overweight. And he finally got fed up with his situation, and he started working with a yoga teacher. He asked a bunch of different yoga teachers, and he finally found a yoga teacher that would take him on. And you see in the video him struggling with even just trying to stand unaided, and you see him, you know, it's only a 6-minute video, but I mean, at the end, you know, it brings, every time I watch it, I start crying because this guy goes from literally not being able to stand, forget balance in a yoga pose, to actually running, you know, and doing headstands, you know, and it's just by sheer force of will because he wants to make the change. And, you know, obviously somebody who's a paraplegic is not going to be doing what he's doing right away, but that's not going to happen. But this is a guy who basically was told you'll never walk unaided again without these braces. I think he had been a para jumper and he jumped out of too many airplanes and, you know, supposedly done so much damage to his back that he couldn't walk. And you know what? He didn't take the no for an answer. And when you see this, the person that he is in the beginning of the video, he looks like he lost 20 years and, you know, and gained a whole new life.
Yeah. I mean, he actually waited 15 years, right?
After
the initial injury and diagnosis, doctor said he'd never walk again, 15 years of gaining weight. And then he started and the body, he actually recovered. That's quite something. So, it sounds like the real issue is the limitation of ideas. You know, it's actually having the wrong ideas about what's possible and challenging those things. And when you've come up against challenges, clearly you've got a force of will and a force of energy to get something done, but how do you deal with the challenges organizationally, politically, that you've had to overcome?
Well, it takes more than just one person to when I look at it visually. You're heading down this road, and then you get pulled off the road, and you're off the road, and you're lost, and you're trying to figure out how to get back on that road. And so once you get back on that road, you learn from your past, but you got to move forward. You can't be stuck in the past, and so you learn from your past, and that's where you gain your skills and your confidence from, and so that you can move forward. And the day that you don't move forward is the day that you're going to stop. And that's okay, too, if that's what you choose in your life. But I believe that no matter who we are as people, as humans, that I think are in the when you're looking to the environment and the world, and it all is about giving back, whether you're a plant or an animal or a human, right? So it's about giving back. So if you stay, if you're going down that road and you get pulled off and you want to stay there, that's okay. But if you get back on that road and start moving forward, then maybe there's an opportunity to give even more back, you know, to yourself, to your family, to your community. Because this all comes down to your family, and it comes down to your community, and it comes down to sharing your story of who you are as a person. And, you know, I constantly am wanting to know what my story is in my life. And I'm sure like others, but so that's how I get through it. What is it that that needs to get done? It takes a lot of people around you. It takes a lot of understanding and acceptance, and a lot of time to kind of understand: is this the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? Is it what's best for people? Is it what best for me or best for the community? But at the end of the day, I just hope that. That when you get pulled off the road and those things happen, is to figure out what, learn from your experience, and then begin to move forward.
Right. And you know, you have always surrounded yourself with people that actually have common vision and inspiration and maybe different skills that that actually can be brought to the table to move something forward in anything that you've been in part of. How do you forge those relationships?
Well, a lot of them come by just being understanding who you are as a person, and then sharing that with others. And a lot of people think that I like to be out in front just, you know, talk. But at the end of the day, I believe that when people are speaking to you, that they're trying to tell you something, and it's the most challenging thing is really listening and understanding what they're saying, so that you can understand who they are. And so and that brings you to a comfort zone to talk about it. And for me, simply, it's just a matter of the more people you get to talk to and know, what a gift.
And
what
a gift. I've also heard you talking about, like, creating partnerships, but there's also some value in that partnership for both sides. You know, Special Olympics Alaska may get a donation from a company, but the company, because their employees are starting to participate in Special Olympics Alaska and they're helping the athletes and they're helping the program, there's a sense of pride and there's a sense of community that develops. And then, you know, the company's getting, like, the workers are more happy about going to work. so there's an exchange that goes back and forth. And I think a lot of people in the nonprofit world think about, you know, that your goal as a CEO is you're just fundraising, and it's kind of a one-way thing. You know, it's just money comes in and supports the program, and then you go off in your corner and you do what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that with Special Olympics Alaska. That's not really how it works. It seems like it's always there. Yeah, there's an exchange of money to keep the program going, but there's definitely something in the relationship that Special Olympics is offering to the people who are donating and participating in. So it really goes both ways.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, how do you drive your mission of your nonprofit? And it needs human resource, it needs monetary resource, it needs the entire community. And in Alaska, the generosity of Alaskans is unbelievable, and so many other worthy causes from on and on and on. Having said all that, I think Kevin and Sam are people in this community here who taught me a lot too about perseverance and about understanding who I am as a person, and understanding that without good health, without good friendships and relationships, you can't do some of the things that you want to do too. So certain amount of things that you have to do take care of yourself, just like any good athlete. Tom Spindle here from Mat-Su, was working with him for the Mat-Su Seahawkers Club. We brought about four or five athletes up, and I was sitting next to a young up-and-coming quarterback for the Seahawks, and I asked him, what's it like to be in the NFL? And he said, you know what, my coach always taught me, never be satisfied with yourself because someone else is going to come and take your job and that you have to do all you can to be better. And that's coming from a 22-year-old. And he said, what about you? And I said, well, it's the same, but I'm not in the NFL. But here's who I am, and this is what I do. But I said to him, you know, some of my idols in the sports world were Walton Payton and Michael Jordan, one of the best in their fields, right? Well, they had the talent, but then they had to work at that talent. And they worked more than anyone else to keep that talent up. So for me, I tell people I don't have the talent, so I have to work even harder to get to that point of where Walter and Mike and people in the business world too, how hard you have to work to get to that point.
There's this great Will Smith video. It's called Will's Wisdom. It's a compilation of little bits and pieces of interviews with Will Smith over the years. And there's one where he's sitting down with an interview, and the interviewer says, well, what's the secret of your success? And Will Smith says, it's really simple, and I'll tell you what it is. If I get on the treadmill and you get on the treadmill next to me, two things are going to happen. I'm going to die or you're going to get off first. And that's it. It's really, he's like,
simple is that?
I know. He's like, I just work hard. It's like the other guy's sleeping, I'm working. The other guy's eating, I'm working. The other guy's watching a movie, I'm working. You know, and that's what he does. I mean, and he's got this thing that he says that I love. He said, the universe is like water. It wants to get out of your way. It wants to get out of your way. And, you know, that sounds kind of new agey and airy-fairy in a way, but I know what he's talking about. He's like, you know, when I set my mind on something, I know I'm going to make it happen. It's like already done. We just need to work out the details. And he has developed enough confidence because he's done it so many times. And, you know, and that's what I see in terms of, you know, a lot of people get stuck in the myth of talent, that you have to be really talented in order to be good at something. Like, and a lot of people do come into the world with natural talent, or they, you know, their parents are skilled at something and they learn from their parents. But ultimately, if we don't use that talent and we don't work on it every single day, and we don't keep pushing and pushing to go, you know, higher, better, further, you know, keep pushing to develop our skills, we're going to be mediocre. So what it comes down to, you know, because like you said, there's always going to be somebody better who was born with more natural talent. But it's really not about that. It's about, you know, how much are you willing to do.
And there's something about when you are actually reaching, you are actually performing, you know, whether or not you reach your goal in 1 minute or 5 minutes or 5 years, there's something about putting all the chips on the table that kind of liberates the human spirit. And I hear that in you, and it's certainly something that comes through in Will's Wisdom, if you can check that on YouTube. But when we don't hold back, just that is an incredible experience that is probably more important than whatever result we might be after.
Mm-hmm. And all of this comes back to, at least I ask all our volunteers and staff and athletes and family members and sponsors, is to share your story about Special Olympics, how important it is in your life, and share that with people. But also about all of us, if we can share our story about who we are and share that with other people, how powerful is that, right? But to share that story, you have to work at it. And then the fun comes after work. You can't have fun without working. And so you got to work at it, figure out what that is. But even if you are successful, if you're not sharing that story and if you're not giving back, so what? Or if you're doing all this work and you're not staying healthy, so what? Right?
Yep. Is there any, I know you don't want to play favorites with any particular athlete, but speaking of stories, I'm just wondering if there's any story of an Alaskan athlete that really stands out for you, you know, of a big change where, you know, somebody where, you know, family and friends were like, you know, well, this person isn't really going to be able to participate in the community or society in any meaningful way. And just to watch what Special Olympics has given that and how it's changed their lives and their family and their friends' lives.
There are so many stories and I can't single it out because there are so many, and I really like your question, and I don't want to feel like I'm not answering it. But you know, we have had athletes start at the starting line and at the finish line speak to their parents for the first time.
Wow!
In the state of Alaska, We have had an athlete working out in our training center facility where she is at the end of life. We've extended her life by working out with Karen Patton, our personal trainer. We have spoken to parents that said, my son and daughter isn't competitive, but yet we couldn't hold them back at the once we got to the starting line. We have had people who wouldn't go into a pool who now swim. So many stories of people. But you know, some of my favorites, you know, are the guys that were there back in the 70s or 80s, and they were running around the track and also doing powerlifting and some other our gymnasts and our speed skaters. And you know, Chris Vance was brought snowboarding to the state of Alaska. He lives here in Anchorage, and there's just so many.
And when's the next games? When's the upcoming games? Because we just had the summer games, right? So then the winter games will be when in Alaska?
Yeah. Our next winter games will be in the second week of March. But going back, we have a small golf and bocce tournament, which is unified the pairs of people with and without intellectual disabilities in September. We have some great golfers here in Metsu. And I think also heard we're building some bocce courts at the Senior Center, which is going to talk about partnerships. And then we have a big bowling tournament in November, and then we have our winter games second weekend of March, and summer games are always the second weekend in June.
And don't forget the Polar Plunge.
And then the Polar Plunge, which is December 15th at Goose Lake in Anchorage. I can't tell everyone who is listening, whatever you do in your life, go get an acupuncture. And I know I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying this. Talk about heroes and talk about people who have made a difference in my life. Go get an acupuncture. Take the fear out of you. It is one of the best things that can happen. But what it really teaches you and what Sam and Kevin have really taught me too, it's a lifestyle. It's not something that's just going to cure you overnight. And, you know, we came over this country in the 1700s. The British were taxing us. We threw tea off the boat. We started moving out west. And here it is, 2012. All we have done in the history of our country is react. And we just really aren't talking about prevention. And when you talk about prevention, and you talk about a lifestyle change, and you talk about the culture of acupuncture, it's been around for 3,000 years or probably longer, it truly will make a difference. And if it's not acupuncture, it's yoga or
meditation,
whatever it is, don't be afraid to, don't let your fear get in the way. And I say that to the athletes, our athletes all the time. Don't let anyone say no to you unless you try it. But also you need to talk to your family and friends too to make sure that whatever they're asking you to do is worth doing. But this is talking about prevention and not reacting. And I think
right, and
we
it's
as
good,
a culture react.
It's a good conversation because you're exactly right when we were talking about the number of people in this country with, you know, who are overweight and who are diabetic or pre-diabetic or looking at potentially heart disease and all sorts of complications that come with diabetes. You know, we're trying to get these people health care coverage, but what about keeping them out of the health care system in the first place? And I think that's part of what you guys are trying to do with the new campus and the facility there and having a place where athletes can go and work out regularly and work with personal trainers and get that teaching so that the idea is not to get sick in the first place. And so we already know how to do that. I mean, that's what we keep coming back to. And so just as you were saying, you know, the athletes aren't any different than the rest of us. And it's the little things that we do every day, you know, what we put in our bodies, how much we move our bodies, you know, who we choose to surround ourselves with, you know, having this conversation with you is incredibly inspiring. So, you know, I walk away from this conversation and I'm inspired. I would much rather talk to people who are very inspired all day long than hang out with people who are just talking about the same old, and not wanting to do anything about it. So even that is a part of health. Because if you're with people who are inspired and have vision, then you're going to be more. You're going to want to push your boundaries too.
Yeah, and I don't know how true this is, but years ago I heard someone say that for every negative statement, you lose 10 positives, right? So I've taken that to heart. That if you give out a negative, we just destroyed 10 positive that just happened around you, right?
Yeah. And so having said that,
right? So and I tell that to people. I don't know how true it is, but when you really look at Why waste your time on why not take a negative and make it a positive? Why not take a no and make it a yes? Why not do something and make a difference for yourself and your community? And why not, as Alaskans, that we don't become even with the leadership we have in this country, why don't we become even give a bigger gift back to this country?
So so basically what you're saying is people need to get out and volunteer at Special Olympics.
and many other
course. So if you want to know more about Special Olympics Alaska, you can go to SpecialOlympicsAlaska.org and you can learn more about the program there. And you can certainly volunteer in your local program, whether it's in Matsu or it's in Fairbanks or Kenai or in Kodiak. You know, there's plenty of programs around the state to get involved with. So if you're listening, and if you're listening outside of the state of Alaska, be sure to check in your state. There's likely several local programs that you can get involved with.
And also go to our Facebook, too.
That's great, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. And I really appreciate some of the things you've said. One of the biggest points you made is value and need. You know, we have to demonstrate value and need. And this program has just really brought out so much richness. And we just appreciate you being with us.
Thanks a lot for being here tonight, Jim.
And thank my mom, Sima Bellamacy, from Bridgeport, Connecticut, for being here.
Thanks, Sima.
Thanks, Sima. Good night.
Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links, and resources from our guests and show topics.
Programming support for KVRF Community Radio is provided by Gelato Cadrino Alaska, serving the tasty Italian ice cream to patrons both in Wasilla and now Palmer. Using imported ingredients and local valley dairy products, Gelato Cadrino Alaska uses a fourth-generation Italian gelato recipe. A little experience of Italy and authentic gelato flavors such as hazelnut, chocolate, pistachio, vanilla, and fruit, and many more. Created fresh daily, can be sampled at the Wasilla location at City Center Business Park, 609 South Kinnick Goose Bay Road, and now in Palmer at the Palmer Downtown Deli, 550 South Alaska Street. Gelato Cadrino Alaska, supporting healthy sweet tastes of Matsu Valley and Community Radio.